Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, we continue on a Monday, last full week in June. Mac, you already have my blood pressure going through the roof. So everybody that comes across the border has a court date. It's brilliant. And then we don't have enough judges. That's twice as brilliant. Okay? And we don't have the jail space, so we release them. Good God. What a shit show. The only shit show that's worse than that is our Congress, who won't do anything about it and seeks political gain from it. How do you go to bed at night if you're in that group? Honestly, if you're Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, who've done the same stuff and been obstructionist because it's a political tactic now. How do you put your head on the pillow and know that you're not doing what you're supposed to do for the country? And you're right. It is what got Donald Trump elected. So if I were to give advice to either side, be very careful because you're both out of step with the people that got Donald Trump elected. They're sick of you. They're sick of this, and this is just another installment. You can't do anything that we send you to Washington, D.C. to do. Healthcare reform? Nothing. And the email goes on. Immigration reform? Nothing. How do you sleep at night, knowing that you betray your oath to the American people? You know what? Good question. They're politicians, man. They get out the X-Acto knife, and they they get out the X-Acto knife, and they carve out some kind of rationalization that allows them to go ahead and put their head on their pillow. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Charles Krauthammer. One of the things that is sorely lacking in our nation is what I would call articulate dissent. Krauthammer was both articulate, and when he chose to dissent, you listened to him because of the way he conducted himself and the power of the things that he said. And I don't care that he was a conservative, because I didn't agree with him on everything he said. But you know, you sat there and you listened to, you know, the premises of his argument and the way he brought you his argument and what he thought was good and what he thought was bad. And to me, it's the country intellectually at our best, a free democracy, vigorous debate, you know, all of that. So Fox put together a little thing called the Wit and Wisdom of you know, Charles Krauthammer. And so, who passed away last week at the age of 68, he wrote, probably right at the beginning of the month, when doctors told him that his cancer had returned. He thought it was in remission. He thought he'd be coming back on the air. And then he wrote a very eloquent letter essentially saying goodbye. And so I thought we should focus on that. All right. So
shaft of light.
So this is a wait a minute. I don't know what's happening. I'm trying to get my act together. Stop heckling me too, all right? Okay, I got it to work. Here it is.
In the end, everything, all the beautiful, elegant things in life, depend ultimately on getting politics right.
He was born in 1950 in New York City.
Their wit and humor and generosity of spirit has co-authored my life.
He attended Harvard Medical School after undergraduate school to study psychiatry. I'm going to read you some of the sub headlines that obviously aren't going to be in the audio. 1972, during his first year there, he was paralyzed and would remain in that condition for the rest of his life.
We're very sweaty. It's very hot. So we go for a swim, we take a few dives, and I hit my head on the bottom of the pool. It just hit at precisely the angle where all the force was transmitted to one spot, and that is the cervical vertebra, which severed the spinal cord.
Nonetheless, he forged ahead, and he graduates as a paraplegic. And he completes his studies as a doctor of medicine in 1975. Goes on to a three-year residency at Massachusetts General Hospital. In 1978, he moves to Washington, D.C.
I thought, once I'm in Washington, isn't that where they do politics? One thing will lead to another.
He starts out writing for the New Republic, then becomes a speechwriter for Walter Mondale in 1980. That's right, I said Walter Mondale, right? Democratic for Vice President Walter Mondale at the time.
That lasted 6 months. And when we got totally crushed in the general election, I got a call from the New Republic, and they said, we think you're unemployed now. Would you like to come work for us? I said yes right away and started. On the day Reagan was sworn in, that's the first day I started the New Republic as a writer.
If you can read a column by Charles about something, and you can still disagree with him after you're through with it, then you know you must have a pretty good argument.
Even and for those of you that have paid attention to his passing, he coined the term, the Reagan Doctrine.
I realized that what Reagan had done without a grand master plan was to challenge what at the time was called the Brezhnev Doctrine. And that was, whenever we take over a country, it becomes a communist, it's ours. And all of a sudden, what Reagan had done is to challenge that and say, no. You don't get to keep what you got. We're going to challenge your possessions, wherever they are. And I thought, this is a really good idea. And I'm going to give it a name.
He begins writing for the Washington Post in 1985. In 1987, he's awarded a Pulitzer Prize for commentary in the Washington Post. Wrote a book called Things That Matter. 3 decades of passions, pastime, and politics was an instant New York Times bestseller. And then he joins Fox News as a political commentator.
You'll ask me, how do you go from Walter Mondale to Fox News? And the answer, the short answer is, I was young once.
Yeah.
Now, the longer answer is, that it actually wasn't, I didn't have an epiphany. I didn't wake up one morning, the clouds parted, a shaft of light came out, and the Lord spaketh unto me. It wasn't quite how that worked out. It's quite simple. In my 20s, I was a Democrat. And incidentally, this is a road that's not, this is a road that has been trod by many, including, of course, Ronald Reagan, who started out as a New Deal Democrat. And what happened is simple. When I was in my 30s, I began my writing career. The evidence on what the Great Society, the War on Poverty, which I had believed in my 20s and my teens, the evidence on what its actual empirical effects were began to come in. And I was a physician. I'm open to empirical evidence. And the evidence was absolutely unmistakable. It not only was money wasted, it not only wasn't helping the people it was meant to help, it actually was undermining the communities and the people it was meant to help. And I began to re-examine the premises of this kind of great society liberalism I believed in. And over time, and with the accumulation of evidence, I thought to achieve the same ends, a humane, a decent society that works well and provides for everyone, a small government conservatism is the far more accurate answer for any society. I think this is the usual sort of arrogant liberal argument that we represent the science and therefore you have to knuckle under to whatever regulations we decide. When you're making these kinds of regulations, whether about medicine or ozone or about traffic safety, for example, it's never the science that dictates. It's a balance that you make between the cost and what you're going to benefit. I think the last 6 months have shown that nothing that Trump has ever said in the past, even in the present, can ever be used against him because for some reason he is immune to the laws of contradiction. He's weaponized Twitter and he said essentially, you better come aboard. He did it with a smile, he did it with a joke. I think he means it.
He was not a fan of the president and a frequent critic, but also honest enough when he saw the president move the country, honest enough to point that out as well. So again, which makes him atypical among commentators.
When I started to do your show every night, you know, it ends at 7, the game starts at 7:10. The garage at Fox is 7 minutes. If the wind is fair in the 3rd Street Tunnel from the garage at Mad Stadium. So I get them in the bottom of the first. I mean, how can I resist?
He is was a huge baseball fan. Was a huge baseball fan. You know, I saw this. I thought, you know what? I should have been friends with Charles Krauthammer.
Passion, interest. In words that are intrinsically
funny.
You don't have to have them in any context.
Well, the principal one is booger.
Booger is like the number one.
Booger's the number one.
But I've discovered the word trousers.
If
trousers, because it's so stuck up English twit talk.
My next guest, one of the most influential and respected commentators of our time. All right, let's be straight up. Charles Krauthammer is the most influential columnist of our time.
Syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer.
Syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. With that, we're back with our panel. Charles.
The wit and wisdom of Charles Krauthammer. He's just a remarkable, remarkable guy. Again, his living his life as a paraplegic, as a quadriplegic. And so you hear him overcoming that. He's going to be a doctor and was pursuing his work in psychiatry when he decided he was not going to do that anymore. He's going to get involved in politics. And then starts out as as writing for speeches for Vice President Walter Mondale. And you hear, but he has this sense of humor always. And, and the nation, not better without, a guy like him, So, during the course of the week, I'm going to play different cuts from him because he was genuine. He was well thought and well reasoned. And again, you don't need to do anything else but turn on the TV today and notice that the shit show that exists and the exploitation that the media does of the shit show for its own, it's like this this spiraling toxic cocktail. Our politicians using the media, our media feeding off the politicians, all for what? All for more revenue. And more clicks, more viewers, blah, 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 which they can then trumpet as. And you have a guy like Charles Krauthammer who leaves us, and we're certainly, we're poor for his departure, because into that vacuum, what steps into that vacuum? More of what we have? That's certainly not good. So you'll hear from him, all week. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear Jeremiah Workman. A little bit of audio that I put together probably close to 2 years ago after he came on. I think he came on in June or July. I'm not sure, but he came on within the first 90 days of us being on the program. And to this day, it's one of the most raw interviews that I've ever done. Some of my favorite interviews that I've done on Almarine Radio, the one I did with Ronnie Reyes, Gold Star Son, I love that interview. The one I did with Cal Humphrey, PFC, on Iwo Jima, I love that interview. The one I did with Jeremiah Workman, I love that interview because he's so powerful in it. So just a little reminder out there to reach out to people that you know that have been affected by trauma, And I think the single greatest turn that we make as veterans is when we decide to help other people. And they don't need to be veterans. They can be anybody. And certainly our experience with trauma can go a long way to helping others. And, again, you know what my first experience with trauma is when somebody reached out and put their hand on my shoulder and said, you're never going to get over this. And that has sent me on a journey in my life because that advice spoke to me. Now, a lot of people would hear that and recoil from it and go, but it made perfect sense to me when I sat and thought about it that day after I recoiled at first. But after I thought about it, I thought, wow, that's good advice from people that know. And then shortly thereafter, it happened to me for the first time. The movie started in my head, and I remember thinking to what he had told me about, you're never going to get over this, but you'll learn how to live with it. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with me, and I think that's so important to people that deal with trauma. There's nothing wrong with you. It's a natural response, right? So you're going to have to you're going to learn to cope with it. So you're going to hear that coming up next on a Monday edition of Almarine Radio. Right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place!
You're going to see mental health survivors. And
don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright. Say you got a real solution.
for people with minds that hate.
All right, the Gunner's going to join us here in a little bit. This is a little audio from my interview with Jeremiah Workman, and I sent it to somebody over the weekend, and I sat here and I listened to it, and it's incredible. It's a great interview. I would urge you if you've never listened to the whole thing, listen to it. But this is just it's about 13. I don't know, it's about 15 minutes. So again, this is a reminder to reach out to people that have been affected by trauma. As I said, the most significant corner that you turn, is when you begin to help others. I think it helps with your own pain, you know, and I think about, Barnado Simpson. Okay, he was a PFC at My Lai, and he did horrible things. If you could have brought him back into the Army, not on active duty, but to speak and to turn his pain into something positive, would he have killed himself? Would he have killed himself? Because there's nothing he can do about it. The only thing he can do is play it forward and know that I'm contributing to nobody else going through what I went through. My pain has a purpose, and if I can help the Army from having any events like this, then that's my mission. That's what I want to do. So I think it's important that once you start helping, I think it changed your life. Maybe his life would not have ended in suicide. So with that said, this is Jeremiah Workman, about 15 minutes, and then the Gunner will join us. He's been watching World Cup soccer.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
What got you out of the Marine Corps? Were you medically discharged? How did you get out of the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I was actually medically retired for PTSD and PBI.
So you're medically... How did you deal with the whole being medically retired thing?
Well, it had gotten to the point where I went from the museum to I was Sergeant Major Kent's driver for 2 years, and then back to Quantico to the Wounded Warrior Regiment. And it was made very clear to me that I was not going back to the infantry. So at that point, they said I could stay in the Marine Corps as long as I wanted to, but I was not going back to the infantry. And that was what I wanted to do. So
that was your professional hope, and I get through this stuff, I'll go back to the grunts, I'll be with my people, I'll be with my tribe, I'll be good to go.
Yep. When I went on the med board, I actually had come to terms with, you know, if I can't go back to the infantry, I think it's time for me to move on to the next chapter of my life.
So let me bring us up to date on the mental health stuff. So you're going to see mental health providers. And are you making progress or not making progress relative to your PTSD?
As far as
and your demons.
What time period?
We're talking when you're driving for the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps before your med board.
No, I was going to mental health quite a bit. I was making pretty good progress. Sergeant Major Kent was instrumental, get me back on my feet, and like I said, he was like a father to me, and he just played a significant role in helping me out, not just me, but my family, and that really started to get me to where I need to be.
So then, When they sat you down and counseled you and said, hey, look, you're just not going to get there. You're not going to be able to be full up round. Did you accept that at first when you heard that news, or how did that play in Peoria?
I was bummed out because after I reenlisted the first time, I knew I was going to do at least 20 years in the Marine Corps. That was my goal.
Right.
But I had to to take a serious, honest look in the mirror, and I knew, like, would I really trust myself to lead Marines in combat? I had to ask myself that question. And that was tough.
And what was the answer?
I don't think I would trust myself.
Why not?
Just, if God forbid another bad experience like what happened in Fallujah, and
you wouldn't be able to live with it.
Yeah, I'm not fully over it.
Right. Hey, and people have told you you're not gonna get over it, right? You're not getting over that.
Yeah, it's a lot of people told me, you know, PTSD goes away when you die.
There you go. So you're getting med boarded, and you have to accept that. And do you make peace with it, Jeremiah?
I do. I, like I said, I knew I wasn't going back to the infantry, so I didn't have a choice. I made peace. And I started focusing on the next part of my life, the transition. I knew I had a family I had to take care of. And I didn't really have time to sit around and pout about it. So...
That's a long, rough road. Are you still drinking as much at that point when you're getting out?
No, not nearly as much. No, I had really slowed down a lot. Thank God.
All right, now I want to play. That's part three. Okay, I want to play about 5 minutes of part two. Health stuff. So you're going to see. It's always smart when you play the same part. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Did anybody try to intervene and talk to you? So this is the part directly before what you just heard. So that the events you just heard, you can hear the pain in his voice, right? What he's talking about now are events that happen after he comes home, right, before he ultimately gets the help that he needs. What kind of efforts had people made up to that point to talk to you and help you?
It wasn't until I got relieved as a drill instructor. That's when my battalion sergeant major... And I owe him a debt of gratitude. He hand walked me down to medical at Parris Island.
And you had never, up to that point, you had never been to, you had never seen a mental health professional?
No.
Okay.
Not
wow.
At Camp Pendleton. I went through DI school. I went through McQuist school. I started working recruits. And I was the whole time losing my mind, literally. And then on top of that, I get the Navy Cross right after I get relieved. I actually got relieved, and then I got the Navy Cross.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. One day I'm a scumbag, and the next day everybody wanted to be my friend.
And the whole time, though, you're convinced that your career's over and you're a failure in dealing with those feelings.
Yeah.
But you had never been to see mental health. That's hard to believe.
You know, I think I was one of the, back then, nobody, it was like PTSD, what? Who? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Here's a fistful of drugs. We want you to take the drugs so you don't hurt yourself or anybody else and just walk around in a, be a zombie so you just don't hurt anybody. That's essentially what they did to me. I was so numb. I couldn't tell whether I was coming or going. I remember one time pulling up to work there at Parris Island, passing out with the truck still running, and I sat there in the truck. They found me 3 hours later sleeping in my truck because I was just zonked out. You know, and this is just, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Are you still drinking at that point?
Oh, yeah. I really say there was two things that helped me. One was the birth of my son. When he was born, I was like, you know, you got to get your shit together. You cannot just be in this dazed and confused all the time. You can't be a zombie. And then the second thing was when I left Paris Island, they gave me orders to Quantico so I could be closer to Bethesda for better health care.
Right.
And General Tryon was the CG down at Paris Island, had transferred up and took over recruiting command at Quantico. And when I checked in to Quantico, he brought me up for an office call. And he's like, hey, Double Dog, is there anything you need? Is there anything you want? You know, I'm here to help you. I said, sir, I've never had anybody with a star ask me if I want or need anything. So I'm just going to shoot. He goes, go ahead. I said, I'd like to go to jump school. I want to feel like a Marine again. He goes, you want to go to jump school? You're going to jump school, son. It was that easy. Yeah, jump school was pretty cool. There was only 11 Marines. There was like 350 of us in the class. And then we had a blast. We graduated on the Marine Corps birthday, so they let all the Marines jump out on our last jump together. And we sang the Marine Corps hymn as we were coming down. It was pretty cool.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was neat. But I felt like a Marine again. I was doing something Marine-ish. I hadn't done that in a long time.
How important was that to you?
Oh, it meant the world to me. I felt like a scumbag, to be honest with you. Like I was just useless. Yeah, I kept going to mental health, and things would get better, and then I'd do it. You know, one step forward, two steps back. I'd play that game. It was like I was running in sand.
Right.
Back on the medication. And then, you know, they had me working at the Marine Corps Museum. That was my new job at Quantico when I got back from jump school. So every day for 6 months, I had to stand there and dress blues or Charlie's and basically, it was the weirdest thing. A lot of people knew that I was there. And
did you hate it?
Oh, it was terrible.
You know, I mean, you've seen what the hell is the movie? Oh, well, Flags of Our Father, right?
Yeah.
Did you relate to the parts where those guys came home and they were on that bond tour and people are calling them heroes and getting paraded out in front of everybody and they're not dealing with it? Did you relate to that when you saw that?
That's exactly what I felt like. That's exactly what I felt like. People would come to the museum, can we get pictures with you? Can we do it? I'd go home, just drink. Give me a beer.
Give me a beer.
No, I kind of just kept myself. I mean, there was a few folks I talked to, but for the most part, I kind of stayed to myself. It was weird. A lot of the higher-ups, I could talk to them. Like, I remember having a conversation with General Lefevre and General Coleman, and, you know, they all knew how I felt and were very supportive and things like that. I got kind of close with General Mattis. And, but yeah, it was so bizarre. even when I first was awarded the Navy Cross, I didn't even wear the ribbon at Parris Island for probably 3 weeks.
Why?
Because I associated it with nothing but bad. Well, that came about, I told you I had been out doing the speaking tour thing.
Right.
And, after one of the speeches, a guy came up to me and he said, "Have you ever thought about putting your story down on paper?" And I said, "No." And he said, "I think you should. I think you could help a lot of people." And I said, "Well, if I could help some people and I could quit telling my story, I'm all for it." Because everybody asks, what happened? How'd you do this? And that was my motivation behind it, was if I can help, because the book's not all about combat. I'd say 25% of it is about what happened in Fallujah. The rest is my struggles with PTSD and how I kind of overcame that and moved on and kind of control it, not let it control me. But that's how it happened. 2009.
Hey, good looking picture on the cover, by the way.
Down there.
There you go. Look at that. Got those big bushy eyebrows going. No.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Got your drum wings on there? That's awesome. Is the book a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I thought it was good. I thought it was therapeutic for me. I felt like, I had a ghostwriter help me do it. And just working through the process.
What, that Marion, Ohio public education didn't work for you?
Yeah, exactly.
What's up with that? English teacher at MHS?
Yeah. No, it was therapeutic. And I felt like I got the story out there, at least, you know, what I saw that day, how I remembered it. And I felt like I had 1,000 pounds off my shoulders. And I started getting a shit ton of messages on Facebook. Hey, brother, you're not alone, or I'm dealing with this. You've helped me. You've helped my son. You've helped my daughter, blah, blah, blah. And it just, I was like, you know what? I'm really glad I did this. And I mean, to this day, I've gotten messages from all over the world, actually, you know, saying, "Hey, you've helped me." Sometimes it's not even combat related. It's been sexual trauma, or it's been, I was wrongly accused and put in prison. Now I finally got out of prison and I read your book. It's helped me. I mean, it's been good.
Okay, what about when you wrote the book? Are you still drinking at that time? Were you going to mental health? Were you making progress? I mean, were you on the upswing then?
Yeah, when the book came out, believe it or not, that was probably some of the heaviest drinking I did, just because I was out on the road so much. I spent a lot of time out on the road doing speeches and things like that.
So let me ask you, Flags of Our Father comes out, and you see Ira.
You know, that surprised me when he said that, because I was anticipating he writes a book and he starts to get better. And then when he said that, I was like, holy shit, man, when does this story get better?
Days.
Yeah.
What do you think?
There's actually a line in my book about drunken Ira Hayes.
Really?
Absolutely.
And you could totally identify with him.
Absolutely.
Wow.
I had more than one person in my family say they're going to find you dead somewhere in a hotel.
How does this story get better? Or when do you get out of the mental?
I got out and.
I'm searching for when the hell does this thing turn around? You know, again, but this is the daily fight that people go through.
You know, and here's a decorated Marine, you know, who lives, but what he feels inside of him is, you know, I'll play part one tomorrow, but I don't want this. I don't need this. I just want those guys back. Those were my guys, you know.
January of 2010.
All right, so now we're going. Your son is born. You said things that make it better. Your son is born in February of 2007. You go.
Okay, you're gonna hear more from Jeremiah Workman in this interview. I'll play bits of it throughout the week, along with he and Charles Krauthammer, because both pieces I think remind us of being better. Krauthammer in terms of, you know, articulate dissent. Articulate discourse, and that we can be better than what we see on TV. You know, again, Fox, CNN, you know, just a dressier, slicker version of the Jerry Springer show. That's what our national discourse has devolved to. Yeah, devolved. Look it up. Boom. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, Mike Musselman. Yeah, you can find that interview in its entirety on the website. Just put in Workman. You'll see it in parts. You can listen to it in one fell swoop. But you know what? His willingness to come on, Mike called him and introduced us, and I called him, and he says, yeah, man, I'm happy to. But it's his bearing his soul in the interview, and the interview is over 2 hours. I think it's about 2.5 hours all total. Makes it, I mean, he could have come on and just boilerplated it and blah, 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 but he didn't. And awesome stuff. All right, we'll take a break. The Gunner next.